When life gets harder, you get smarter. You don't mission, you level up like a boss. Connect Vox Fibre to your home, starting from 554 Rand per month. Level up your experience with Airtime's Wi-Fi boosters, Vobi Voice app calling, Office 365, and over 160 other products to enhance your lifestyle. Live smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
So, Rechot, are you actually brave enough this week to be drinking a beer on this podcast after what happened last week?
Disaster struck at the last minute. Like I said, that moment been flashing through my head. Yeah, no, I'm fine now. I've got perimeter set up. I've got a new perimeter borderline set up around my PC.
The DMZ.
Less clutter too. Yeah. I moved things. I think we're good, but I must say kudos to this Alienware notebook. It handled everything. There was like one little drop on the inside that I could see on the plastic outer rim, but nothing else. I mean,
so we had a few people online last week when disaster struck. What exactly happened?
Well, the play-by-play, Duncan, we were about to go live. The pressure was on. I mean, you were counting down the moments. And I also had...
our adoring fans were waiting for us, and then disaster struck.
I had a cat in the background that I was trying to get rid of. And then as I was trying to kind of just reach over to get... I didn't even know what I was trying to pick up, but I was trying to move something close or move something away.
Yeah.
And in that shuffle, I managed to knock over. But also just not a lot of beer. There was still most of the beer left that I had afterwards as a little mini victory lap for myself after managing to fix a PC.
drown your sorrows afterwards. Yeah.
And it was a good beer too. It was a nice homebrew too. But yeah, the Focusrite too, I'm very surprised because that thing actually, I thought it was going to short because the water got into the XLR connectors, yes. The beer at least. And yes. It just made a bit of a crackle as I was speaking to you, like, whoa, something's wrong, and it switched off.
There's a bit of a crackle on your voice right now, actually. I hope there's some damage to it. You are coming through your main microphone, are you?
Yeah, I am. That is interesting. I can try the other XLR port if we want to quickly check if it is in fact that.
Sure, plug it in if it's not going to disconnect. But yeah, bit of a disaster last week. But Rechot, Are you back? Are you
testing? Can you hear me? How's this?
Yeah, it sounds about the same. Okay. Sounds about the same. So I think
maybe it's the fire behind you that's causing all that crackle.
Yes, I should probably explain why there's a fire behind us actually. But before we get there, what are you actually drinking something this week? Are you taking the risk?
Yes, then I've got something. Yeah, but I think we should. I don't know if should we go with mine first?
All right, go for
it. Do you want to go with yours first?
All right.
Mine's very familiar.
So I found this. What?
Okay, go for it. Okay, no, you talk about yours first. Ooh, what's that?
Well, hang on, I need to go back to Wirecast so that I can see what's actually going on. There we go.
What's that, Duncan?
It looks similar, doesn't it? Oh! Snap. Oh, that was good organization.
Well, I had to try it.
And we didn't even use Uber to do this.
Yeah, you use good old feet through the door. Yeah, after you sent me that photograph yesterday, I thought, okay, hang on, let's get on the same page here.
Yeah.
And also because it just launched this week, I mean, how could you not, right?
So neither of us has tried this yet, so we'll be testing this for the first time live on this podcast. Wow, Rechot, you're getting ahead of me there.
I'm pouring it over my keyboard, Duncan. I am so brave.
You're living dangerously. So it's from Jack Black. What's it, the Jack Black Brewing Company? Limited release, small batch. It's a winter beer. It's called the Wolves of Winter, and I just love that. I just love that label. Let me get it right up close there. Look at that. And it's an oatmeal stout.
Yeah, the colors actually pop out so nicely on the stand. That yellow and blue, it's very nice.
So it says on the back, celebrate winter with your own pack of wolves. Roasted malts form the backbone of this pitch dark, rich and robust stout. Generous oatmeal and hop additions add great complexity and balance to this heartwarming beer. Then it says, best served and savored fireside, which is why we have a fire behind us right now. That's a real fire, I hope, by the way, in case you didn't know.
Oh, crap. No, I'm just...
don't get too close. You might burn.
I should have brought my marshmallows, man. Where is it?
So here we go. Here goes. I'm going to pour this over my expensive microphone.
Carefully. I haven't tasted it yet, so yeah, we're waiting for you to go for the first official Tech Central sip of the week.
That is a nice color. Very chocolatey.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Beautiful and dark.
So, smells almost like a, it smells a bit like Castle North Stout, I would say. First thoughts?
It's nice. There's a nice maltiness to it. Very nice maltiness and some, not too much chocolatey yet. But oatmeal obviously is a little bit going to give you a little bit of bitterness, I think. So there's a little bit of bitterness at the end there too.
It's nice. I think it's going to require quite a few sips before I pass judgment on it. So maybe we should give our feedback on this at the end.
It's certainly very drinkable. There's no doubt about it. This is the kind of thing. I would also, I don't know how cold yours is. I would maybe not have it as cold. Maybe
it's been out the fridge for half an hour already, so.
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe more room temperature. Mine is ice cold at the moment.
Okay. Maybe put it to one side then for a while, if you can. But it's
Look, I'm going to be honest. It's not jumping out at me as one of the best starts I've ever had. But, I'm always a fan of a nice limited release. And like you said, let's have, you'll have another one later again or something, and you'll kind of go, it's either, those things that I liked about it is either there or
there's
nothing new there that I would like.
Well, the irony of this is this is obviously a winter beer, and it's sunny and warm outside.
We're going into summer right now.
The fire in the background. Of course, Jack
Black. You should put a braai on, man. It's for a braai, dude.
Yeah, for sure. But Jack Black's a Cape Town company, and I suppose winter continues in Cape Town until at least the end of September.
perpetual winter in Cape Town.
Yeah, summer arrives sometime in November. But it's not bad. I like it. You're right. It's not the best start, but it's tasty and it's nice and rich.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I do say at the back here, this is not really this is for savoring, not for sessioning. So I would imagine, what we've been doing a lot is you open a beer between a few guys and you kind of share it. So you have two or three samples of that beer.
Yeah.
And that usually is plenty, to really enjoy that, especially if it's like a unique beer like this, because not a lot of people would want to drink a pint of stout.
Yes.
Which is could get quite rich or for a lot of people.
Yes. Well, I do have two of them here. But I suspect I'll only be getting through one during this show, especially since it's 5.5%.
This, you would have a few sips. I think the warmer it gets, also the flavor profile will enhance a bit.
Yeah.
Especially around the fire there, that fire that
just smell. Hold it towards the fire.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, good stuff. It's good stuff. And I like the fact that we managed to match this week. We should do that in the future.
Yeah, yeah. I think we should, we'll just start a group. We should maybe tweet it out before, then people can, our viewers can also have one.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like an interactive session.
For sure. But we'll give some feedback on this towards the end of the show, and I think we'll have a better idea of our views on it towards the end. But it's not bad. It's not bad at all.
It's not bad. What I did have recently, though, what still stands out a lot more is the chocolate milk stout from
That's very nice. Breweries. That's very nice. Also in extreme moderation, I found.
Yeah, exactly. But I had one. Well, I bought some last week, 2 weeks ago, and just as a change again, and it was actually quite tasty. Also worth checking out, I think. But that's again a start, not the water so much.
Yeah, yeah. The other reason not to consume too much of this is you'll put the pounds on very quickly if you drink too much stuff.
Yummy.
One last sip, and then we'll get into our tech news. Should we do it?
Intro?
shall we do our show? Let me get things kicked off. I'm Duncan MacLeod.
And I'm Richard van Berg.
This is Talk Central, episode 269 for the week starting 18 August 2019.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central. Join our YouTube live stream on Sundays from about 1 p.m. and please hit that subscribe button.
On Talk Central this week, Vodacom wants to switch off its 2G voice network.
Also on the show this week, MTN shuts down over 50 base stations due to vandalism. Huawei wants you to develop apps for Harmony OS. Samsung launches the Galaxy Note 10S, and we have life on the moon.
It's not life as well. This kind of life as we know.
Not life as you know.
Well, we've got a picture of this life on the moon. We'll put that up
crazy,
a bit later.
Crazy story, actually.
Pretty scary looking thing. It's Sunday afternoon, and we of course are live streaming on YouTube, and it's time to talk everything technology. How's it, Richard?
How's it, Duncan?
It's our quiz.
The first question, how much will the 256GB Note 10 Plus cost in South Africa according to Samsung?
And Huawei has unveiled Harmony OS. Which smartphone will it reportedly first debut on?
The third question, Uber last week reported a record quarterly net loss of how much?
And who was last week appointed as full-time Cell C CEO?
And analysts say store rationalization may be on the cards for Dion Wired and Game Outlets. Who owns the two retailers?
Answers to the quiz, of course, as always, at the end of the show. But let's dive into this week's news and interesting press conference that Vodacom held this week to talk about the to talk about their network and to talk about talk about the industry more generally. But the main interesting announcement at that press conference, if you like my 8-bit graphics behind us, by the way, they are looking to switch off their 2G voice network. And we know Telkom has already said they're going to be doing this within the next 12 to 18 months, probably within the next 12 months. Telkom is in a much stronger position than Vodacom to do this because they launched their network much later than everyone else, and they never actively sold 2G phones on their network. And in fact, Sipho Maseko, the CEO, said not too long ago that they don't sell 2G phones at all through their retail stores. And in fact, the only 2G phones that are on the Telkom network are from phones that have been brought across from other network operators by consumers. So they don't have a huge number of 2G phones. Vodacom, on the other hand, over 30% of its base is still on 2G dumb phones. It's about a third split between 2G, 3G, and 4G devices, with obviously 4G growing faster than the other two technologies. And it's interesting that they want to do this because obviously they are desperate for access to new spectrum and they want to launch 4G services in the 900 megahertz band, which is the only sub-gigahertz spectrum they have access to. But Andries Delport, the group chief technology officer of Vodacom, said they can't just switch off their 2G network because there's still a lot of legacy applications and technologies being used by that network, not least of which is emergency services, telemetry type services. There's SIM cards in all sorts of weird places like traffic lights and places and cars in all sorts of weird places where you wouldn't expect them necessarily to be.
But do those still use 2G? I thought those would have used at least
a lot of legacy stuff which just never gets upgraded. You know, they put a SIM in and the technology is 2G because it's just been working for decades. So they can't actually switch off their 2G network entirely, but what they want to do is they want to switch off their 2G voice network for phones. Mm-hmm. What that will do is free up a lot of spectrum, so they can reduce the amount of spectrum they actually allocate for 2G to a very small subset, so they can reduce the size of the spectrum bands they're using or the amount of spectrum they're using for 2G for those specifically for those legacy applications to perhaps 2 or even 3 megahertz, which is a very tiny sliver of spectrum. Mm-hmm. And then what they want to do is use the remainder of that 900 megahertz spectrum. I forget how much they actually have in that band, but it's significantly more than 2 or 3 megahertz, and use that and re-farm it for 4G LTE, for providing better in-building coverage and, of course, for rolling out 4G in more remote parts of the country. Mm-hmm. And it makes a lot of sense, but I think it's going to be very tricky for them, given a third of their base is still on 2G phones. And a lot of that base is obviously poorer customers who haven't been able to afford to buy a smartphone. So they're going to have to manage this politically quite carefully as well, because you don't want to be seen to be just cutting off the connections of people who can't afford to buy a 3G or 4G smartphone.
Yeah, it's always a tricky thing, but we know with technology, at some point, things need to be switched over. And, You know, we know the banking system, for example, is plagued by this legacy technology problem. I've been in there for years. I mean, okay, they're kind of also a very critical system. You can't just switch it off, right?
Yeah.
But at which point do you actually then switch this off and say, okay, hang on, we're really not going to do this anymore, but we're definitely not there yet. I think we're still in that transition period, for sure.
Yeah.
But maybe that's one of the problems we have with all the traffic lights in Joburg, if you think about it. I mean, if the legacy tech is so old in most of these traffic lights, it could be one of the reasons why we're having downtime when it rains.
Yes. And I'm sure MTN wants to do the same thing. In fact, I think MTN has already refarmed some of their 900 megahertz for both 3G and 4G for rural areas. Which is why you get 3G or sometimes 4G just about anywhere in the country you travel if you're on the MTN network, which is pretty good. I think their 4G coverage now, they're talking something like 94-95% population coverage, which is pretty impressive given that these operators have never actually formally been given any access to spectrum specifically for rolling out 4G. They've done a pretty good job of it. But yeah, 2G is living on borrowed time. I don't think that I don't think they're going to switch off that 2G network entirely for at least the next 10 years, though. I think it's just too much legacy stuff still out there. But I think they're going to actively start working towards it now. But I still think Telkom will be the first to switch off, and they'll probably do it by the end of next year. And good riddance to 2G. Who needs it anymore?
Who needs 2G? At one point, we loved the latest technology. I mean, you remember just roaming on Edge or just being connected to the internet and good old HSDPA, HSPA Plus, HSDPA Plus.
Yes, HSDPA and HSUPA, and then it became HSPA Plus.
Good times. And then WAP before that. You remember good old WAP protocol?
WAP, yes.
On that, what was that, those black and white screen phones?
Sure. I do.
It was a different place back then.
The wireless application protocol. It was horrible. It was awful. And it was 2G only in those days. And I remember when Edge launched and we used to think, wow, I'm on Edge now. This is so cool. This is so fast. Peaking out at like 56 kilobits a second.
What did we know? Yeah.
Yeah.
And now we have fiber. Yay.
Yeah. And 5G is coming.
5G. I'm still skeptical.
The operators are going to need so much spectrum to do 5G properly, and given that we haven't even licensed 4G spectrum yet, I'm also a bit doubtful about when we're really going to see this in South Africa.
Look, I'm all for the slow rollout, but yeah, I mean, it's definitely not going to be a demand, I think. We're happy with 4G. I think most people, you can do anything you want with the really good throughput that we have these days. I mean,
absolutely.
I very rarely get under 20 megs anytime. You can do anything with that. It's just the data cost now.
Yeah.
And 5G, will 5G make that more expensive, less expensive? I mean, somebody must be covering the cost for that expensive hardware, right?
Well, it's going to need a lot more base stations, especially given this is going to be rolling out at much higher frequencies, so you need a denser network. I don't know if the operators are going to price it differently to 4G. We've seen that in some markets. The US is pricing it differently. But 4G is going to be around for a long time to come. 4G is going to be the new 2G. I think 3G is going to probably disappear relatively quickly. I don't think 3G will be around as long as 4G is going to be.
I think
we're going to see 4G around for the next 20 years at least. And it's going to be the main way people connect still for a long time to come.
Yeah, it makes sense. It makes a lot of sense because it's a solid technology. We know it works well. And it works very well in conjunction with the distribution of the base stations at the moment.
For sure. For sure. He says, segueing into our next topic. There may not be a network left soon if criminals have anything to do with it.
That's crazy.
The vandalism of high sites by people stealing copper cables and batteries in particular is out of hand. And this is something they addressed at the Vodacom press conference this week. And it's something MTN has been hammering on about for a short while now as well. And in fact, MTN announced this week that they will be shutting down over 50 base stations. They have, in fact, already done it. Shut down 50 base stations around the country. I think it was 54 in total, if I remember, 53 or 54. Because of ongoing vandalism has made it unaffordable, uneconomical to actually keep repairing these base stations. Now, the thieves are mainly going for these very large batteries that the operators have installed to deal particularly with Eskom load shedding. Apparently, these batteries, particularly the lead acid cell batteries, are particularly useful in solar installations. And I believe in Zimbabwe, they're particularly popular at the moment, where there's currently load shedding taking place for about 18 hours a day. So I think a lot of these batteries are going across the border, and a lot of syndicates involved in this. But Andries Delport from Vodacom said that that Vodacom is no longer deploying lead acid cell batteries in its network at all. Instead, they're putting in lithium ion batteries at great expense. Obviously, those batteries are much more expensive. Mm-hmm. But they're specific batteries that cannot actually work outside the context of a base station and without a specific supplier code that you have to enter in to power the thing up. So the operators are fighting back, but I think the problem is these thieves are getting in anyway to find batteries, even if they're not usable batteries. They probably don't even know yet that these batteries are not usable. Hopefully they'll find out pretty quickly.
You can probably strip it down, right? I don't know. I mean, I could be wrong here, but stripping that thing down, taking those cells out. Mm. I mean, people are doing it with Teslas. You can probably do it with, but I don't know. Lithium-ion batteries, I don't know enough about it.
No, I don't either. I'm not an expert on battery technology, but the problem is they're breaking into these base stations and causing enormous damage. They're cutting cables and they're ripping up infrastructure, and it's pretty expensive to replace. And MTN very concerningly said that they're putting guards on some of these base stations, and the crooks are arriving with guns and there's shootouts going on. So it's a very serious problem and something that needs urgent attention at the most senior levels in the police service. It's disconcerting because at the end of the day, who's going to pay for this? It's you and me who use cell phone services.
And that's why data isn't getting cheaper, right?
One of the reasons.
One of the reasons, because these costs need to be covered somehow. Mm. Yeah, I mean, what else do you say about this? Unfortunately, criminality gets the upper hand if law enforcement cannot adequately handle the situation. I mean, obviously, there's a lot of reasons for that, but now it's starting to impact real infrastructure. When this starts happening, where are these base stations, by the way, that they've shut down? Are these in rural areas or are they city centers?
I think they're predominantly in peri-urban areas, but MTN specifically is talking about Johannesburg and Greater Pretoria regions. So it's not out in the sticks anywhere. This is in the cities, on the edge of the cities.
Which is kind of worrying in its own right. Eh? I mean, if you have, supposedly, I guess, the right security closer by, this shouldn't be happening. But yeah, but there's a will, there's a way. We know criminals can be incredibly clever.
Yeah. Well, you saw Did you see the Sunday Times as a lead story this morning about the brazen jewelry theft of Jan Rupert's company in Ravonia, in Bryanston?
No.
About how these crooks got in. They basically dismantled a wall on the side of a vault. They came as dressed up as security guards. They used angle grinders and all sorts of stuff, and they got in there and they got away with Rolex watches and other jewelry worth a retail value of about 300 million rand. ADT, the security company, even responded to a call. And these guys had put fake locks on the doors because they knew the response team would come in 10 minutes. And they even signed the slip. They signed the ADT, Fidelity ADT slip to say that, they'd come, they'd check, there was no issue. But the ADT guys were actually talking to the crooks who were in the process of an armed robbery. And once the ADT guys had left, they spent the next 9 hours on site, angle grinding and chipping away and breaking into this supposedly secure jewelry safe or a vault in somewhere in Bryanston. Absolutely astonishing.
I blame 100% Hollywood for this.
Yes, straight out of Ocean's 11, as the Sunday Times pointed out.
Exactly. I mean, I've watched these movies and gone, damn, I've got an idea that would pull off the perfect heist, right? I mean, you all have these kind of cool, clever, you think it's going to be the best idea. If there's people out there who've got nothing to lose, then boom, you've got this solid plan there.
Yeah.
Scary stuff.
It's unbelievable. Unbelievable. Yeah, it makes the battery thieves look like rank amateurs compared to what happened there.
Mm.
Tim Powell. Tim, thanks for joining us on our live stream. Tim says Vodacom, MTN, and Cell C have 11 plus 11 megahertz of 900 megahertz spectrum. So, if they can shrink their 2G spectrum down to just 2 or 3 megahertz, it's going to free up a lot of spectrum for mobile broadband. So thanks for that, Tim, and thanks for joining our live stream. To cell phone operators, I don't know what you really do about it. I mean, beyond using technology to deal with these guys, it's very difficult to protect these assets because, you know, Vodacom has something like 14,000 base stations around the country. I'm sure MTN is not far behind. Cell C, I think, has got about 6,000 base stations around the country. I forget how many Telkom has. It's also many, many thousands of base stations. And these are all over the place. You can't exactly have a guard on every site. 14,000 base stations require 14,000 guards, which I think is far higher than Vodacom's total employee base.
The other reality, too, is, I mean, put these measures in place and somebody's just going to get around it. Like you were just talking about this ADT scenario. I mean, there's always a way. Somebody either gets bribed or gets a clever way in. The problem is what they are stealing. So the value, the assets that they are stealing has got some market value, and somehow those get into a market, right? Somebody's buying and selling these things.
Yeah.
If we look at the copper scenario, I mean, that's probably an easier one to crack, but nobody's doing anything about it. I don't know if anything more will be done about the battery syndicate.
You need good police work to solve this sort of thing, because it's obviously criminal syndicates behind this. So you need good police work to bust them. To stop them if they found at the border taking batteries across into Zimbabwe. Good police work. It's how you solve crimes like this and how you prevent it. But whether the South African Police Service is capable of fighting this sort of crime, I don't know. Certainly the mobile operators feel they're in a losing battle here.
Well, and that, again, impacts us at the end of the day. I mean, what if one of these base stations affects somebody getting an emergency call through? I mean, that's life-threatening again.
Yeah.
I don't know. If this is in urban areas and these are remote freestanding towers, maybe those towers need to be moved to different constructions. I mean, I'm sure they've been thinking about these things. Making it more difficult to get to it is still going to rack up costs. Mm. There's no point in putting cameras in to kind of monitor. I mean, that's just going to be a byproduct of security. But, where do you hide these batteries? Bury them deep underground. But they dig up copper cables.
Apparently they do.
Live electric cables, and they still get to them. So,
well, Andries Delport was saying that they actually do hide them. They are putting them underground in concrete barriers and all sorts of things, hiding them. So
they're
not
getting through that. Yeah,
they're finding them anyway, right?
I mean, they can find the track in your car within seconds. Mm. They steal live Eskom cable. I mean, there is no limits. If there's value attached to something and somebody wants that money.
Mm.
Unfortunately, that's also a byproduct of unemployment and not enough money going around for people that really need it. Mm. Desperate people do desperate things. I'm not justifying it. I'm just, I'm saying there is a lot of people that are desperate for a lot of things.
Yeah. Sad story. Says a lot about our country and the state of our country at the moment. Let's talk about more positive things.
Happy stuff, please. Yeah.
Let's talk about Harmony. Or a Harmony OS from Huawei. So the details announced over the last week, Huawei South Africa had a press conference this week to announce further details and to state explicitly that Harmony OS is not a replacement for Android. Exactly. the moment it is capable enough, I'm sure Huawei will turn it into a replacement for Android. They say they are still committed to Android on their smartphones. However, there is talk about one of the Honor devices probably next year getting the Harmony OS, and they're looking to deploy it in an Honor TV, large flat screen TV, as well as potentially in Huawei's next smartwatch, which I thought was quite interesting.
Sounds like an Apple competitor than an Android competitor, to be honest.
Yeah, to iOS. Maybe. They're talking about this being I forget the term they use, a distributed ecosystem or a distributed architecture, so that it'll work across multiple devices on a microkernel. Interestingly, there'll be no root access to this thing, so... I did ask Akram Mohammed, who's the chief technology officer at Huawei's consumer business group here in South Africa, whether you'd be able to download and install Harmony OS on a Huawei smartphone, for example. And he said, we're not going to be specifically making this available, but because it's open source software, you can probably root your Android phone and install Harmony OS on it. But because you can't root Harmony itself, you'll probably never be able to go back to Android if you want to. Which I think put some limitations on it. I may still find an old device and put Harmony OS on it anyway, just for fun, to see if I can do it. But while we're making it, or claiming that this operating system is not in response to Donald Trump, that this is not done out of a necessity in response to the U.S. ban since partially lifted on Huawei, that this has been in the works for many years. But my interpretation of it is certainly is that they've certainly accelerated development of this in light of what happened, and are, and I think have made it very much central to pillar of their strategy going forward, because they've realized that you know, if you've got a volatile U.S. president as we do at the moment, that you know, there's a chance that you may not continue to get access not only to hardware components but also to operating system software like Android and like Windows. So I think it is very high on priority on Huawei's priority list right now. We don't know much about the OS yet. There's no builds out there. We can't play with it. We haven't seen it. But certainly from what I've seen, it looks like it's going to be a very lightweight OS. It's going to have to be if it's running on IoT devices, on smartwatches and all that sort of thing. I don't know if there's going to be different versions for different platforms or whether it's all going to be the same core code. Seems unlikely, but maybe that's what they're working towards. But what was interesting was Akram Mohammed from Huawei this week said that, well, we've got $1 billion, $1 billion, for app developers to develop for this platform, and a big portion, or a, not a big portion, but a portion of that, a substantial portion of that, $1 billion is going to be directed outside of China. In fact, 80% of that amount. And Huawei said that South Africa is a key market, and some of that money will be directed to South African developers who develop apps for Harmony OS. So they're clearly putting a lot of money behind this, and I think they need to, because you know, if you want people to move to your platform, you need app developers behind it. And I think that was one of the big failings of Windows Mobile, is even though Microsoft also attempted to do the same, perhaps they didn't put enough monetary backing behind it, because at the end of the day, of course, Windows Mobile failed. And the app ecosystem at the end of the day, especially on a smartphone, is what determines its success or failure.
That's the one thing that makes me just, you know, think out loud about the scenario. If Windows, if Microsoft had a hard time, maybe they were too soon, maybe, they were ahead of their time with their operating system, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, apart from the big, you know, the big social media apps, Instagram, Facebook, WhatsApp, these guys, you know, I don't see much incentive for everybody else to develop, because we know how much effort it is to create an app for various platforms. I'm sure you can use various emulators on these various app platforms, or, you know, I guess if these app developers are able to export code for these platforms quite easily. Mm. Otherwise, it's going to be tricky to incentivize anybody, especially if it's a unique framework, you know, a unique platform that doesn't really work well with others.
Yeah.
But if Huawei is going in the future for their own full ecosystem operating system to dominate and rival the likes of iOS and Android, this is certainly the way to do it, right? Since it has, I mean, because we kind of remember the outcry that happened when people went, but I don't want another operating system but Android on my phone.
Yeah.
When the Huawei US debacle happened. So I think you're certainly right. They're speeding up their process now to get this out, and to just to kind of tell people that this isn't going to replace it yet, or replace it. Get people used to it. Get people start developing apps for it. Maybe it's good and people like it, and then they can escalate their plans. And then it becomes an organic growth, and you can say, but you know, this is what we've been working towards for a few years now, which they probably did. You know, that would be the next frontier, to take on their own operating system and take over Android if they have the biggest phone base in the world. I mean, Apple can do it with theirs. They've got their own operating system on their own devices. We know Huawei is one of the, well, they are the biggest phone manufacturer at the moment, right?
Second biggest.
You know, so once you get people used to your software, it's very easy to make that switch.
Yeah. It's hard, though. It's going to be very hard to convince users to move off of Android because they're so used to it. And, of course, we saw Samsung developing its own OS called Tizen, and that wasn't successful. But Huawei's pitching this as more than just an OS. They call it an ecosystem.
They're starting on the other side where people normally build their operating system and then trying to get into an ecosystem from there. They've got the devices, so they're just providing a layer over an existing operating system, saying, okay, look, this is your new lifestyle interaction with our products. Yeah. And it's probably going to be based on what I've seen before from their software, probably going to be a very good piece of software that you want to use, and there's going to be some nice features in there.
It's going to be open-sourced, which is interesting.
I can now run it on my Windows machine, oh, that's going to be a great feature. Now, all of a sudden, my Huawei lifestyle device has become important to me.
Yeah.
It's a clever marketing move, if that is indeed the way that they're thinking.
Yeah. So we should see some developments on this, and hopefully an initial release in the coming months. And I think a third ecosystem is going to be fantastic if they can pull it off.
Yeah,
the competition's needed.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I just think the app is always going to be the tricky thing. But, you know, I'm sure they've thought about just running emulated app software, so running Android code on their operating system.
Apparently, it's not going to work, but it's going to be very easy to port. They say so. They're going to be releasing an IDE. They're going to be releasing an IDE that they say it will take you less than a day to port your app across to Harmony.
Interesting. I wonder what in comparison with Microsoft's was, if Microsoft had anything to that effect to make it easy for developers.
They must have. I don't know whether a day was
quite the same
was
thing.
The
app stores were a very different thing back then too. The code base wasn't as mature as it is now, obviously.
Yeah. But good luck to them. Lots of work to do for Huawei there, but I think they got a big fright from Mr. Trump in the last few months.
Yeah. Need to up our game, boys. Let's do it.
Yeah. Another phone manufacturer that was in the news over the last week or so was, of course, Samsung, and they have just launched their new flagship, the Galaxy Note 10 and 10 Plus. And I have to say, that is a gorgeous-looking phone.
Really? I've never been too impressed by the devices as a non-user, to be honest. But, just another slate.
Yeah, it's big. It's big, but it's beautiful.
What is the appeal? I mean, is the screen this time? I mean, you've obviously played with it some more. Is the screen great, much better?
No, I haven't played with it yet. In fact, I don't have review devices in the country yet, as far as I know. It's just actually gone to U.S. journalists in the last 24 hours, I believe. So, haven't had a proper look at it yet. Just watched the launch videos.
That's pretty impressive. That photo technique that they've got going there.
Yeah.
Look, a lot of people swear by the devices. I've just personally never been a user. But it looks great. The Note devices have certainly always been one that I liked to play with. I just don't like the sharp edges of it. I don't know what it is. I mean, with the previous Galaxy devices too. You know, the top left and right, well, the top corners at least.
Yeah. Digs into your thumb. Digs into your palm. But when you slap a case on it, it's probably okay. But it's that screen on the 10 Plus is massive, 6.8 inches.
Nice.
Which puts
now
it
the pen again becomes another nice feature, right?
The what, sorry?
The pen on that big screen.
Yes, indeed. Now I've always been a fan of the Note devices, ever since I saw the first one all those years back. I picked this thing up. I was at Dimension Data. I think it could have been a Samsung event, and someone was demoing it there. And I picked up the original Note, which I think had a 5.2 inch screen, if I'm remembering correctly. And back then, the normal form factor, I mean, the iPhone, I think, was a 3.5 inch screen at the time. Picking up this 5.2 inch phone, it was like, wow, this thing is so big. And then I thought, this is the future of phones.
Remember when we were calling these phone sizes phablets
yes.
as a particular category? I mean, they're just a normal phone. Now it's a standard thing. And I never thought I would use a blast screen device. I mean, my Mate 30 Pro isn't as big as a Note. But
you have a Mate 30 Pro. How did you do that?
Sorry, Mate 20 Pro.
I'm coming right over.
I shouldn't have said that. Damn, they're going to take my device away now. But But my Mate 20 is, I mean, that's the biggest device I've used. And I became very, very quickly used to that bigger screen in my life. And now, when I use or actually have a smaller device in my hand, I don't actually know how I ever did it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's crazy how you adapt to technology, especially if you're resistant to it.
Yeah, I mean, try picking up that one of those original iPhones now, and you'll think, whoa, this thing is dinky. What's wrong with it?
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. And I used to love my 6S. I mean, that was my favorite device ever. Never go bigger than this. And I remember telling you those words distinctly.
I remember that. I remember.
But yeah. Maybe I will be a Note user one day, still.
Yeah, but once you do away with the bezels, the bigger screen, of course, is a lot more manageable.
Mm. Oh, yeah, for sure, for sure. And I guess, you know, your high-end phones today is so good to begin with. It's just really getting the screen size you want.
Yeah. But I must say, I look forward to actually seeing this phone in the flesh, because it does look gorgeous. If you look at that, there's some of that video footage in the background. The new DeX mode looks pretty cool as well. So you can turn the thing into a PC without that silly dock.
That's always been a fantastic concept. I just never seen it used to its full extent. I just, again, it's maybe too early for people to actually fully use it as a desktop machine.
Maybe people who are actually buying a phone that is this expensive already have a laptop.
True, true.
But that functionality, as you know, the power of this phone will be in the hands of mid-range phone users in a few years' time. Mm. And when that happens, then maybe we'll see DeX taking off, assuming they bring it down to the mid-range.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, once your entry-level devices have the right specs, and we know that's happening all the time, you know, top-end CPUs just kind of filter down to mid-range, and then tech gets into the next generation entry-level devices.
Yes. Yeah, so very desirable phone, but very expensive. We'll get to
how many are you going to get?
How many am I going to get?
Two. One for the home, one for the car.
yeah, I don't know if I'll be getting that phone. I'd love one, but it's very expensive. Right, our offbeat story of the week. Have a look at this bastard, if I can say it on the podcast. You might need to just move your head out the way a bit, Recha, to other way.
Our right's going.
You wouldn't want to see that in a dark alleyway, would you? Are you alive down there? That is what? A tardigrade. Apparently it can survive through a nuclear holocaust.
Yeah, that's crazy.
It's hardier than a cockroach.
One ugly, ugly thing. But having, I mean, yeah, how crazy is it to have, I mean, it's pretty, wasn't there a big thing in science where we shouldn't be infecting other worlds with our, or space science, where we shouldn't be infecting other worlds with our biology?
Pretty sure Arthur C. Clarke and Isaac Asimov have both written extensively on the subject, yes.
But I guess I mean, we kind of broke that when we went to the moon, right? Didn't we leave anything? We left stuff behind there. I mean, that flag alone.
Yeah, full of mites and stuff.
Exactly, you never know.
Yeah. But this was deliberate by the Israelis who launched that, what was it called? I forget the name of the spacecraft. But they put up a spacecraft quite recently, a month ago. Was it in April? Okay. And it had a payload on it, which they didn't bother to tell anybody about, including the Israeli government or the U.S. government, which launched the rocket, of these things called tardigrades, which I had never heard of before this thing, before this rocket went up. Now, that thing behind us on the screen right now looks terrifying and something out of an alien movie. But in fact, I think it's only about half a millimeter big.
Yeah, they're incredibly tiny. I mean,
tiny little things, very hardy, and they can survive just about anything, including being frozen. They can survive without oxygen, I think. I don't know about oxygen, but certainly you can throw a lot of abuse at them and they'll survive. Now, for some reason, this Israeli mission decided they were going to put a bucket load of these things on this mission. And of course, we know what happened to that mission. It didn't work out quite as successfully as they'd hoped, and it crash landed on the surface of the moon. So there may now be lots of these little tardigrades running around on the surface of the moon. Now, articles I've read suggested that they're not going to survive all that long in the harsh outer space environs where the temperature is way below zero, where there's no oxygen, no atmosphere, and the moon is being bombarded by ultraviolet and probably cosmic rays. But they're up there, and no one actually knows how long they might survive before they die in that environment.
I mean, they're also in a dehydrated, frozen state to begin with. So, I mean, they're going to stay in that state.
Oh, are they? I didn't know that. Okay.
That's what I think, yeah. Well, that's what I just read. They were definitely in a dehydrated state. But I was also just going through this one report on Live Science, where somebody said there is other cultures already on the moon. I mean, stuff that astronauts have left behind, like abandoned bags of astronaut poo, gut bacteria that's found in there.
Yeah.
So that is definitely, there's definitely junk on the moon already.
Yeah.
We can't do anything right, can we?
So, next time we go to the moon, in fact, I think there are some manned moon missions planned now. Next time we go up there, we'd better watch out because these things might have mutated.
This is a thing you don't know, Duncan, right? Let's say just a meteorite. We know the moon gets hit a lot by just meteorites. One of those could just have the wrong element. I mean, we've seen these science fiction movies.
Yeah, and it could turn into an episode of the Doom video game.
And Netflix will have this the documentary a year later.
It's a fun story anyway. We shouldn't be deliberately dropping Earth's life forms onto other planets and even onto our own satellite.
Yeah, no, please, let's not cause more damage to this solar system.
Lots happening in science at the moment. Lots of missions going on that are quite exciting. It's one of two. What's that moon of... is it Saturn, one of Saturn's moons that Io or Europa, I forget what it's called, where they say there's a big ocean under the surface and they're going to go and probe for life. It's coming up in the next couple of years. It's going to be quite interesting.
I'm still really concerned about the satellites, the amount of satellites and what they are doing up in space. I often come across science stories where they talk about, the capabilities of these things. And, the stuff science fiction really can be real in the wrong hands. So it's, worth watching, keeping an eye on what we actually put up in sky that's looking down at Earth, not out into space.
Yeah. So once they drill into that ocean on Io or Europa, I think which it is, it will be a bit disconcerting if they pull up their drill and find tardigrades down there.
Or worse. Well, anything that's alive could be a problem, right?
I think it'll be fantastic if they find life. But I don't think when we find life in our solar system, it's going to be anything much more than the basic single cell organism or something like that. But you never know. There might be stuff swimming under that moon, that liquid ocean.
Yeah, I mean, a few years ago, we didn't think there was water on Mars, right? Now we know.
Yeah.
No, it's crazy.
Indeed. Let's have a look at the chat room, what's happening. Martin says, that's probably how we got to Earth. Some alien accidentally did an interplanetary seeding. Isn't that what the Scientologists believe? I think that's the basis of Scientology, if I'm not mistaken. Martin also says, mutated from a half a millimeter speck of life. True story. Right. We have gotten a little bit off track, haven't we?
Digressing a bit.
So, tardigrades. Sweet dreams, everyone. We move out the way. What a horrible looking thing. Right. What's next on our agenda? Winner and loser of the week. So let me hit that button. And this handsome chap behind you is Douglas Craigie Stevenson. He has just been appointed as permanent CEO of Cell C. I'm not sure if that makes him a winner, given how much work he's going to have to do to turn that company around. But he's got his head down. He's working hard, and there's a lot of work to do. And we're expecting some news about their recapitalization in the coming weeks. But I thought, since we haven't had a winner for a while anyway, let me pick Douglas Craigie Stevenson for his appointment as permanent CEO of Cell C. Any guesses who our loser might be this week, Richard, without looking at the show notes?
I already looked. Too late.
Too late. Okay. Here he is. How many times has it been loser of the week on this podcast now? That's for his silly trade war. And he may have just have kickstarted a third ecosystem in mobile, which is fantastic news. But for Google and the Americans, maybe not so much. Unintended consequences of your silly actions, Mr. Trump. You may have just have kickstarted a major competitor to Android. I think it's good for us, but for Mr. Trump and for Google and Americans, it's not so good news. So, well done, Mr. Trump. You're our loser this week for the umpteenth time. Rechot, let me find your pick of the week. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so I've been seeing, I'm sure you've seen this little thing on Facebook ads and just one day only or take a lot. This little Bluetooth receiver, it's this big. Mm-hmm. Now, I've got an old, well, my car is a few years old. It's only got a 3.5 millimeter audio jack. So one of the reasons I always resisted going wireless or you know, with a 3.5 mil is because I still actually use it on a daily basis. And that was one of my daily uses for that 3.5 mil jack.
Okay.
Up until recently. So I saw one of these on special. I got two of them. They were 99 Rand each. I mean, they're normally about 130 or something. They're really cheap. But this thing turns any old 3.5 mil audio source into a kind of wireless Bluetooth speaker. So using it in your car, again, you just connect to it and now you have wireless audio. So now actually with my Huawei, I can charge my device and play music at the same time without going to too much effort. Mm. And it works really well. The audio quality is surprisingly good. I mean, it's got nice bass levels on there and the sound throughput is really solid and it's quite loud as well. So yeah, for the amount of money you spend, if you want to turn your old vehicle or any device, I've got a set of old speakers too that I've got that I bought a second one for that I'm going to plug into, and that's going to like just be anywhere in my house. And now I've got another Bluetooth speaker, which is pretty cool, I think. And it, yeah, like I said, it works really well. You just might just want to keep it plugged in. It's got a battery in, so you can run it wirelessly. The battery probably lasts a few hours, but you would want to keep it plugged into a battery source or a power bank for the best user experience. But yeah, so far using it for a week, it's been a solid little gadget. And for 100 odd rand.
It's only 100 rand, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so I bought one. They were 99 rand on a one day only special, but I saw them now on take lot for like 130. Mm-hmm. There's a few different variants of these, but this particular one just I've been seeing it around so much. I thought, let me give this one a try when it came up for special. And yeah, solid.
Cool. Excellent, good pick. My pick this week is, actually don't have a photo of it, so let me just throw up the Tech Central logo. It's actually a book, and it's not really tech-related. In fact, if you watched the very brief solo podcast I did last Sunday after Rechot's hardware incident, I briefly...
It'll be forever known as Black Sunday, Duncan.
Black Sunday. I was thinking Beergate, but...
Beergate. Wasn't that scandalous? It was just as awful.
So I won't spend too much time on this, because I know a few people have already seen this pick, but my pick is a book called The Stellenbosch Mafia Inside the Billionaires Club by Peter de Toy. I finished it last weekend, and very, very good. There's not much tech in it. A bit of stuff on Vodacom and Vumatel, but apart from that, but it's a very good rollicking read about these billionaires that you can see on the cover here: Johann Rupert, Christo Wiese, the dude from Steinhoff, Marcus Uster, and I'm going to forget this guy's name, which I shouldn't do. Yanni Maton, I think it is, spends a lot of time talking about the Steinhoff disaster and the fallout from that, and how the Steinhoff boys moved into Stellenbosch. They weren't a Stellenbosch company, and how they started sponsoring the rugby club and splashing money around and buying fancy houses and driving around in Porsches, and how their old money in Stellenbosch, the Remgros, etc., looked down on this with a great deal of disdain. Also talks a lot about how they were really profligate with investors' money, with Marcus Uster hosting a visit to the World Cup in England and spending ridiculous amounts of money and what they got up to there. But not really a tech pick, but since I didn't have an app or anything else to pick this week, I recommend this if you're looking for a good business book. Thoroughly enjoyable. The Stellenbosch Mafia Inside the Billionaires Club by Peter de Toy.
What did you learn from that book, Duncan? Don't have billions in the bank.
Don't be Marcus Uister.
A bumper sticker in that.
Don't be Marcus, yeah. Don't be evil. But rollicking read, one of the best business South African business books I've read in quite a while. So that's my pick this week. And I think, Rachel, that is the show, as he finds the show notes. I think we just have to do our quiz, right?
That's it.
Okay, let me do the first question. How much will the 256 gigabyte Galaxy Note 10 Plus cost in South Africa, according to Samsung? Hold on to your wallets. 22,999 rand.
Why do those large amounts just seem to be becoming more normal? I mean, it's great. Yeah. And it's actually normal. It's expensive, but it's normal for a phone of this caliber. Second question. Huawei has unveiled Harmony OS. Which smartphone will it reportedly first debut on? And the question is, an unnamed device coming from Huawei brand Honor.
Look forward to seeing that. And Uber last week reported a record quarterly net loss of how much? This is quarterly, not annual. $5.2 billion.
Ouch. Fourth question. Who was last week appointed as full-time Celsi CEO? And the answer is Douglas Craigie. Douglas Craigie Stevenson, who had been serving as interim CEO for the past 5 months following his resignation of Jose Dos Santos.
And the last question this week. Analysts say store rationalization may be on the cards for Dion Wired and Game Outlets. Who owns those two retailers? And that's JSE listed Massmart, which is majority owned by U.S. retail giant Walmart. And that is our quiz and just about our show, Rachat. But before we go, any last thoughts? I've got a few dregs left here, so I'm just going to pour them in the glass.
Let me actually have another taste. Let's do an official final show verdict. I've been enjoying it through the show, but going back to it, having a second taste is quite delicious.
Mm. It's nice. I'd probably give it a 7 out of 10.
Yeah, certainly now that it's warmed up a bit, now that it's more room temperature, it's got a much nicer mouthfeel. I would also give it a 7 out of 10.
Mm. It's not bad, but I actually think I prefer Castle Milk Stout, to be honest.
Yeah, I wouldn't go as far quite, but I definitely better start out there in the craft scene. If this is on the shelf for a long time, I wouldn't buy it regularly, but because it's limited edition, you know, I'm the kind of person that would go back, maybe get another one because, you know, it's kind of interesting and it's new and it's a nice talking point with a good label.
It's as nice as a once-off. And the label's fantastic. The label's fantastic. Right, so just see if there are any other comments in the chat room before we wrap up. Tafadzwa Brian Modukwani says, hey, I've got that Bluetooth receiver. Works like a charm. There we go. There's an announcement for you, Rachat. And Martin says, I've got a dongle in my old car that connects via my to my Bluetooth-enabled phone and broadcasts FM frequency that I tune into radio. This gadget plugs into cigarette lighter.
I was also looking at that as an option, but because I've got a 3.5mm that goes straight in, I figured that the audio source would be better as opposed to Bluetooth audio would be better than FM audio, I would imagine.
Mm.
I don't know technically if that's true. But yeah, that was our, yeah, I mean, it's good to know that those things work well too. I always thought it would be fun to modify those things and then just broadcast FM radio to all the people around you in the car. people listening to their favorite radio station, just hoeing the frequency. They're obviously hardly legal. I won't do that. Yeah. But
and you can Rickroll them.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's a thing. It's quite easy to modify the amplify the signal on those things, I'm sure.
Mm, yeah, for sure. And our last comment this week comes from Glenn Varon. He says, just a pity that this book, I presume he's talking about the Stellenbosch Mafia, won't be an audio book along with many other SA books. That's a good point. We don't have a lot of audio book versions of South African books. But Glenn, this is a quick read. It's not long. In fact, if you sit down in the morning, you should have it finished by the afternoon. I think it's, 200 pages. Quick read.
Good article.
What's that, sorry?
Good long article.
Yeah, exactly. And that's our show. As always, join us here at 1 p.m. on Sundays on YouTube. Just go to youtube.com/techcentral. And our WhatsApp line is 071 triple. I never remember, Richard. Help me out here. 071
triple
9 1111. There we go. So send us a WhatsApp.
Do you remember it?
0711999111. I should know that by now. I repeat it every week.
I always forget. I got the notes opening at the
Right. Until next time, thanks for watching the show and take care. Cheers.
Ciao, ciao.